Yeah, he was a disciplinarian, but he was also probably one of the most gentle spirits that I've come in contact with in my life, barring none. I keep my grandmother kept a lot of my report cards and teacher's notes, and they all consistently say the same thing: bright kid, but too mouthy, or you know, acts out too much, or whatever. But you know, he would always call me down to the office, and he would always put his arms around me, and after he chastised me about something I'd done or said, and say, "You know what? You're gonna make it. You gotta make it. I know you are." And I can distinctly remember talking to this man, even out at Champion High. He always sent that message, and I think that was very important. Compare it to the message that you got consistently from your white teachers, that you know, you're not going to make it, you know, you're worthless and you have no possibility, you know, those kind of subtle messages. Subtle sometimes and not so subtle. But yeah, James Peace and Mr. McDougall are probably, I put them right up there with Jesus Christ. I mean, I think that they both were, just to do the job and to not get respect from their peers and to not get acknowledgement, to it's fascinating to me. You know, they were able to hang in there and still be decent people, despite the way that the system pushed them down.
Didn't Mr. McDougall have a master's from Columbia, or did he? I know he went to Columbia, but I don't know if he got it.
I knew that he had gone to one of the schools in New York, but I wasn't sure about his specific, you know, academic background. You know, just that he had a college degree, and that was enough for me. Yeah. But I always thought that I worked in the Head Start programs a lot, which James Peace ran the beginning Head Start programs, which was basically a summer program where they, you know, took the kids from compromised economic backgrounds and tried to give them an enrichment experience for the summer so that they'd be better prepared for the school year. And I just thought he did a fascinating job of administering those programs, and I've administered a lot of those type programs in my life. And I just, you know, in terms of things that I've done, I've modeled a lot of that after him, the person and the spirit, as well as his technical skills. And he kind of followed me throughout my career. You know, when I would come home in the summers, he'd make sure that I had a job in the Head Start program. When I finished undergraduate school, I had kind of a break because I'd gone to summer school. I finished a semester early. He gave me a job teaching. A teacher had gone out on maternity or sick leave of some type. So I finished a term for her. I mean, just he always made sure that I had a job, and it's just unbelievable that someone would take that kind of interest in kind of following you consistently. And I'm not one of the good kids. I mean, I was one of the bright but bad kids. You know.
Now, he was the principal of Northside.
He was a principal of Northside, and to be honest with you, I can't remember what happened to him once Northside kind of went away as a school. I don't know if he went to one of the other schools, because I went to Frank Porter Graham, where Edmund was at, Mr. Edmund.
So tell me about Northside, unless there's anything you want to revisit about your childhood. It sounds like you grew up happy. That even in poverty or not?
Poverty is not my word, but I'm sure, you know, by all objective standards, it would have been poverty. I mean, we were probably the poorest of the poor. I mean, we would have been categorized as the poorest of the poor. You know, it's a fascinating thing, and I don't even, you know, tell a lot of people about this. And I don't know if Bernice told you, because, you know, it's one of those realities that I don't let go of, because you don't want people to disrespect your reality. But when I went away to college, we didn't even have electricity in my house. We got electricity in my house when I think I was a junior in college, when I came home from my junior semester in undergraduate.
What year did you go to college?
I went to college in 1917. So we didn't have electricity. Now, some of that was economics, and some of it was just my grandfather was tied to. We never had a TV. That's another one of the reasons that we read, a lot, because that was kind of how, that was all contact with the world, that was all stimulation, was reading. Now that had a reality, but I treasure that reality more than anything. And even as we speak, at my house, you rarely have any of the media on. And my brothers who grew up across the way, with my mother, they always had all this kind of media. And they'll come to my house, and it'll be so quiet that sometimes they're like, I can't believe you, there's no noise here. But it's just because I've never had that, and I like kind of just, most weekends I'll just kind of grab a book. I have a whole stack of books, and I'll be reading, and I kind of rotate between a novel and an autobiography or some kind of historical piece or something. But all that came from my childhood, just kind of not having that, and I value it and advocate it. And while it grew out of a compromised economic reality, the outcome was a good one. So I don't have any bitter memories about that. Not at all. In fact, I kind of treasure it. I don't know, PBS did an interesting documentary on a guy that lives up in the mountains now. Can't remember the name of it. And always kind of fascinated with that documentary that they do on his family that still lives off the land and has no running water and all that. I just think it's a great way to live. But so I don't. That's not a bitter memory. It's kind of. It was just a reality. But I kind of. But yeah, it was amazing. People tell their poverty stories, and I go like, you weren't poor. We were poor. I was a junior. I came home from, I think my junior semester at Christmas time, and my grandfather had gotten the house kind of wired, and I actually think Bernice came home from college. That process, but good reality. But what did you wanted to go somewhere else?
Oh no, I was just saying. Did you feel you grew up happy?
Absolutely. Comparatively speaking, I think we had a good life, and I believe that an intact family, a mama and a daddy, will get you a lot of knowledge, regardless of whatever else is happening. And I'm an advocate of that. Black community, that if you got a mama and a daddy, you can withstand a lot of bullshit. And what tears us down is we don't have that structure. It ain't got to be the greatest mama, and it ain't got to be the greatest daddy, but you need both of them there for a child to kind of evolve and be able to handle the bumps and bruises of life. And we had that. We had an intact family. There was every single day of the week. We had at least two meals together. We had breakfast together every day, and we had dinner together every single day. I don't ever remember one when we didn't, unless somebody was away. And that just was and is. And I attribute a lot of my stability to that. Was it good? Was there pain? Absolutely, there was pain. I mean, poverty has pain. And all the things that go with poverty, I've experienced that at some level. But I think the intact family gives you what you need emotionally to sustain yourself through life. Whenever I'm given an opportunity to speak, whether it's at my church or some civic group, it's a message I carry that, that's what we need to on it. On that, as much as I dislike Republicans, I don't think they carry the same message, but I support that message just like a Republican. That's really what we. But you asked me something else.
I wanted to, at this stage, get on to what Northside.
Okay, what Northside was like. It's interesting. I don't have perspective of that experience as a lot of people. I thought the teachers were very rigid. I thought they were too controlling and too parental and they are thought to kind of overstep, what even at a young age, I thought they'd overstep boundaries. And I can distinctly remember feeling, I didn't grow up around a lot of stimuli, so I've always been an internal thinker, and that's what you get out of my kind of childhood structure. So I've always been able to kind of, almost in a surreal way, step back and evaluate a situation and develop some kind of internal perspective. They were a little too rigid for me, and they overstepped the boundaries. And I had a second grade teacher, and I remember distinctly that I misspelled the word bread. It's B-R-E-A-D. I spelled it A-E-D. And she spanked me, spelled the word on my behind. Lillian Robinson, and to this day when I see that lady, I have a bitterness that's probably unhealthy. Those kinds of experiences left a tainted mark, you know, with me. Now, as much as I endure James Peace, his wife was my teacher in third, fourth, fifth, I don't know, like 3-4 years. I mean, she would follow her grades through elementary school. And for a long time, I disliked her, but I tell you, I saw her recently at an event, and she ran up to me, and she was so happy to see me that it kind of broke through all of that. But for all these years, I just had these bitter memories of her, because she was so controlling and just, I think, invasive into the private lives of students. And I thought that even amongst poor children, there are some children who approach the middle class structure more, even in poverty, even though everybody's parents are working class. Some parents have more of the trappings. Maybe they've acquired a nicer home, or they have a nicer home and a car. So they're kind of in that community viewed as kind of middle class, even though they're basically poor by the same economic strata. And I thought those kids got, you know, they kind of got treated very differently. And the real poor kids were kind of treated differently than those kids. And I distinctly remember that. And I have always been bitter about that. And
so you saw prejudice within the school.
Absolutely.
Based on economic.
Based on perceived variables, and you know, I don't know if you could call it economic, because everybody was poor, but some kids were pretty, some kids were very attractive and dressed very neat every day, and I think if you ask some of these people who were those kids, you probably consistently get some of the names of those kids, but you know, I certainly won't do that, because you know, I don't have any bitter feelings towards any of those people. But yeah, I think that reality existed very profoundly in my mind. Some kids were, and my disposition was so bad during that period of time that I was never one of the favorite kids.
It is fascinating to me to listen to your comments, which I think I can understand because of what kind of a youngster you were, and how your home environment was, but you felt negative thoughts about the same characteristics that others in the community had very positive thoughts about.
Yes.
And that's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. I do have that. I mean, I think Northside was a community school, and I think that was a good thing. You know, there was a lot of community involvement, and I can remember that, even when there were events at school, that everybody came out, you know, all the parents participated. If there was a parent-teachers conference, and you realize we lived out in the country, and for my grandmother to get from where we lived all the way over on the other side of town to a parent-teachers conference, that had been a major undertaking, you know, with no car. But somehow, you know, she always meant, there. I can never remember her missing a parent-teachers conference, and she got involved. She wasn't, you know, real big in the PTA, but there was a school function, if it was a science fair or a school play, or she was there, no failing. So from that perspective, I think that was a good thing. And yes, I think that kids being together from common backgrounds, I think that probably was a very pleasant thing, you know, that you knew the people, you knew you knew the community. My best friend is a woman, Betty Edwards, and we like to tell people that we've been together since we were in the first grade in high school. We went straight through high school together, and that's, to have that is a wonderful thing. So Northside was good in that it had that community sense, but
the community together.
Yeah, but I don't think it was such a good educational model. I think it was much too rigid. I don't think that I just disagree with a lot of that rigidity and teachers spanking kids. I never agreed with that, even when I was, and I probably got more than anyone, but I always detested that and can remember some brutal run-ins with teachers who tried to discipline me. I always rebelled against that. And so that piece of it, I internalized. So I don't remember it as pleasantly as a lot of people. But in a school that big, you know, you're going to have some kids who didn't like it. I mean, that's normal.
You're the first person I've interviewed who's been that honest with me, perhaps. Or maybe you're one of only a few who feel that way. A lot of people said to me, I like this. They liked the structure. They liked the limits. They didn't mind the switch because they said, I knew what I could do and I knew what I couldn't do. And, you know, I knew I'd get it here at school, and if I went home, somehow, even though we didn't have a phone, I knew I'd get it at home again. That message would get home before I would get home. I never knew how.
Yeah, that happened, but I don't know. You know, as I told you, I call myself a poor rich boy because my grandmother was very protective of me, and I think maybe I was spoiled and just couldn't acclimate to this environment where I didn't get all this attention that I got at home. Because you remember, I was a baby at home, so in our little family structure.
Let me ask you another question. You resented, it sounds like, this kind of structure, or you at least
absolutely
didn't like it. Do you think that the others needed that structure and you didn't?
I don't know. I mean, probably I did need it. I don't know. You know, I can remember once. There was some, you know, I can remember once, I don't know how this discussion got started in our class. I was in fourth grade, and we had an assignment, and apparently lots of people hadn't done well on the assignment. And the teacher said, well, how many of your parents graduated from high school? And, you know, I raised my hand. I was proud of that. My mother graduated from high school, and she did. And she told me, she said, put your hands down. Your mother did not graduate from high school, you know. And I just little moments like that, I think that's symbolic sometimes of just that feeling of comfort that came with saying and not saying things and not being accountable. And I don't think there was any accountability during the era that I was at Northside in terms of what teachers could and could not do. I mean, beat kids, and I mean, you could whop them back then. And I think with that privilege came some, you know, just verbal abuse that I think was not, you know, it's an arrogance, verbal abuse, I guess, that I didn't appreciate. And I'm surprised that you don't hear that more from people, but
What I hear is that you respected your elders. You didn't talk back to your elders.
Well, I did talk back.
The older person was always right. Your
okay
parents never questioned. This is what I hear
okay
from the people
got you
I've interviewed. But that's not what you liked.
No, I talk back. And probably that I couldn't get away with it, kind of, you know, didn't fit, and, you know. But anyway, that's my memory of that environment. Yes, I saw it as a great community school, and I think some great things came out of that. But I certainly thought that the teachers overstepped their boundaries, definitely. And I felt the same way about Lincoln High School, the teachers overstepped their boundaries.
You felt that way about
consistently through. When I got to middle school, I had Betty King as a teacher, and Betty was distinctly different. She was nurturing and strong, but she didn't have that kind of arrogance and that putting some kids down and uplifting others. I mean, I thought that she consistently treated all kids equal. And I saw her as more a part of the community that I came from, whereas James Peace and his wife, I mean, and James, who I respected a lot, I almost saw them as outsiders to my community, to my reality, but Betty was part of the community that I was part of. And she was particularly nice to me, too. I mean, she always has been incredible. She knows my family, but she's always been such a very nice person to me, even as a kid. But she didn't have that arrogance and that boundary issue that I saw with a lot of the teachers, and what they could say and what they could do and judgments that they could pass, on some kids.
Would you say that North Side was performance oriented, competitive?
See, I was so young there. I mean, that's first through fifth grade, that I don't know that I have a fair perspective of that. But yeah, in terms that I would have remembered it during that period of time, I would say yes. I mean, we had definite assignments, and as I said, you had to get them done. We had science fairs, and you had to have a project. We had school plays that were expressive, and everybody participated. So I think teachers had a reasonable bar, for you to reach. But I suppose compared to what I know as good educational techniques for teaching, were very different. I mean, the knowledge base is very different then, so it's kind of hard for me to evaluate whether, because I inevitably find myself getting into what I know now as an appropriate educational technique versus what was done then, and that's not a fair judgment, because they didn't have the knowledge base. Nobody had the knowledge base. It wasn't, I mean, they did what teachers did during that period of time. I'm sure white teachers did some of the same things.
Well, let me go back and try to be more specific about that question. My understanding is that you had an assembly every week, maybe every 2 weeks, and that during those assemblies, students put on some kind of performance, that the PTA students put on some
Absolutely.
Kind of performance, and that the children loved it.
We loved it. I mean, it was the thing that you look forward to from year to year to year. And parents came out, and absolutely. My grandmother would come to all those things. Each class had a production, and all the other students came to watch that production. And I absolutely believe in that, and I absolutely believe that that's a good thing that's still been in the educational system. I think it builds self-esteem and, just sense of expression and all those things that you get from experiences like that. And I have never understood how that left the educational system. I thought it was such a wonderful, wonderful experience. And there was a sense of pride and competitiveness in those various productions. But I tell you, there was one production, you talk about a scarred memory. The symphony had an annual presentation that it did for the school, the kids in the school system. It was at Memorial Auditorium on UNC's campus. And, I mean, we had to practice, and they would play their music, and then they would play one number where the audience joined in and sang, you know, with the symphony. And this is some of that rigidity that I was talking about. We practiced those songs forever. I mean, you had to learn the words and sing them, and then you'd get the whole school together, and we had to practice together, and we practiced and practiced and practiced. And then when we would go, the white kids sat down in front, and we'd have to sit in the, we consistently had to sit in the back. We never got a chance to sit on the lower level. You know, all of the black kids had to sit in the back. But, you know, everybody stood up and sang at the same time. And I think the school system had a music teacher that traveled from all the schools, white and black. And I just remember that as a very distasteful experience. First of all, having to go there and sit in the back, you know, was not a good experience. But also, it was like, why did we have to practice those songs? I mean, we had to practice week, and you had to remember, you know, do the words, and you had to stand up in front of the class and, you know, sing the song and say the words, and we had to go to assembly and practice the song, and it was like, you're going to be, those white people are going to be there, and you got to be perfect, and we had to dress up on that day. I mean, we had to dress up to go to the symphony. And you'd go, and the white kids would be dressed in normal clothes. It was bizarre, you know. And again, that ability that I have to step back and say, this is bizarre, you know. And I kind of still do that to this day. But I just thought it was so bizarre. And even back then, you know, just looking at the white kid, and then we all dressed up, and we go sit in the back, and they sit in the front. And then we've spent all this time practicing this song. They probably sang it one time. And, you know, and it sends that message that you're not equal. And if something in your life doesn't tell you otherwise, you get in serious trouble. You get into very serious trouble. And I think that's one of the, you hear this reality a lot with, I mean, some people have looked at black male students, and they tend to do reasonably well with their white counterparts in grade 1 through 5, but then in grade 6 there's this big drop-off. And I think one of the things that has happened is that they've gotten all of those not okay messages. And, you know, it's a cumulative effect that at some point, you know, you got so much of that that you begin to believe the messenger. If you haven't had those things outside of the messenger that say the messenger is wrong, you know. And fortunately, I had good messengers outside of the, you know, that message to tell me, you know, you're a decent person, you're good. But for kids who didn't get that message, you get in trouble with yourself. And that's kind of... that symphony experience is one of the most bitter, symbolic experiences that I've had in my life, is that. And if you interview some other blacks, I wish you'd ask them, what did you think about that when you guys used to go to the symphony, practicing those songs all that time, and then the dress up, and then go sit in the back?
Well, the answer may already have been given, and that nobody has talked about except you.
Yeah, that is interesting.
That nobody wants that up.
That's an interesting dynamic, that, you know, repressed reality.
Yeah.
That's an interesting dynamic.
Things that are painful, you got sometimes the best way to deal with them is to go away.
They go away. And I've never been had that ability, you know, but, you know, and it's, I think most of us kind of had this mixture of experiences, and that's just from that side of things that I remember, like, this ain't right. And why I've also had such strong feelings about race relations, I mean, and why when I got to Chapel Hill that I was so outspoken that when I got to Chapel Hill High, that this is not right. It's not right. Something is fundamentally wrong with this picture that two schools have integrated, and you have taken all the traditions from the white school, and you've said to black students, you have to accommodate to this reality. You take their mascot, you take their prom traditions, you take all of that, and you do it the way that they do it, and we've trashed your realities. And that was the core of the uprising, you know, that we had met, and we talked about it. And my class was getting ready to graduate. And
can we go back and set the time? I hate to interrupt you, but let's set the time here. You went to Frank Porter Graham.
Right.
You left Frank Porter Graham.
Went to Lincoln.
Went to Lincoln for
eighth grade.
And ninth grade, and then 10th, 11th, and 12th. You were in
Chapel Hill High. Right.
Okay.
Well, so I went to Lincoln. Okay. I went to Lincoln. Frank Porter Graham was actually a reasonably positive experience for me because I had Betty King. At that point, there was a principal there who was Mr. Edmund, who, you know, we rubbed each other the wrong way. But I had Betty King, and she was kind of nurtured me through that experience. And it was a reasonably good experience for me. Eighth grade at Lincoln High School, boy, you know, that's a difficult time in most, because you begin to get into your puberty and just all your adolescent stuff. So I'm not even sure how you go back and label that as a good experience one way or another. But it was an okay experience. I mean, I played in the band. I was not an athlete, so I didn't have the Coach Pierman experience. That was such a strong influence that I have to tell you there's an inadequacy that you almost felt a little inadequate because you couldn't play for his team, or you chose not to. And